So thanks so much for joining us. Let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
All right, Matt. So, UFC in Stockholm. Millie says that was a great finish right there.
That was something, wasn't it?
Two great finishes in a row. Man, this card was actually bang. Way more fun than advertised. I think we've given it a C. Yeah, and I mean, that's typically what we'll do on some of these cards that have lesser name recognition. Coming out of them, it's always fun to go back because this was legit an A card.
That's the thing. And a lot of the times where you think it's going to be a C card, it's always a bunch of guys who just have something to prove, and then the fights are always exciting.
Yeah, so a great one there. We get to see Anthony Smith celebrating with his corner. You can see my Twitter feed right there. We'll go all the way back to the start, but if we can focus on that main for just a little bit, yeah. I'll bring it up first. We can start there, and then we'll go back through.
Kind of a weird fight.
Yeah, and look at the rest of the cards. So kind of a weird fight because the way that we had scored it, I mean, we had Smith winning the first two rounds, Gustafson coming back in the second, and in the third. And then in the fourth, Anthony Smith comes out strong again like we saw. And Matt said it from the outset. When Smith lunged in right there at the end, this is it. This is the position that Smith needs to be in to get a finish. You can see it up there. Most finishes since 2018, UFC light heavyweight division with four in a row. And if you're not John Jones, I mean, how do you beat Anthony Smith? It's really tough.
It's tough because, I mean, that's the thing. And I know he missed with a lot of big right hands, but you can tell sometimes people miss with a punch and you know that if it did land, like it would knock a horse out. And there was a few of those, like he would throw a big overhand right and it would miss Gustin, who does have phenomenal head movement. By like half an inch, and if that connects, you're done. And best thing, his jiu-jitsu is phenomenal, especially when he's on top. And it was really weird how the fight got to the ground, because it was Gustafson who kind of initiated the clinch, and then they just kind of tumbled down. But I mean, good on Smith, did most of the opportunity. Huge win, by far the biggest of his career. I mean, Gustafson's only lost to champions, really, so hell of a performance.
You and I talked about this before this week even started. We might have mentioned it in This Week in MMA, but for Gustafson, I mean, now he's lost for the title. He lost in Sweden here to Anthony Smith, who's no joke. I mean, obviously now everybody realizes how legit Anthony Smith is. With all the finishes that he had before, the title shot that he got against John Jones, I mean, you get a title shot at 205, it means
you're doing something right.
It really does. And we've seen a lot of movers and shakers with Rakic in the co-main, with Dominic Reyes, with guys like Johnny Walker, even Devin Clark kind of riding the ship tonight. Yeah, we'll get into it. I mean, a great win for Anthony Smith here. So realistically, the question is, you know, Gustafson, we're going to have the conversation here. Looks like he's taking the gloves off. This could be a possible retirement too. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, a guy who's 18-6, who has an 0-2 record against top Anthonys in the 205-pound division.
That's true.
This is a tough one. So yeah, it looks like an Alexander Gustafson retirement here. Does this surprise you at all?
First of all, I don't know what he's saying. He could just be taking his gloves off. Secondly, I wouldn't be surprised if you listen to him on Luke Thomas. He had kind of alluded to it a few times that if he can't beat guys like Anthony Smith, then he probably shouldn't be around anymore. And it was the same thing with RDA after he beat Kevin Lee. He said, I'm going to retire when I don't think I can be champion anymore. But I mean, we all know RDA's still right in the mix at 170. So maybe Gustin's the same thing. Like, if he doesn't think he can be champion anymore, he's just kind of over it. And maybe that's the case. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it looks kind of like that's what we're seeing here from the Swedish, you know, Mahler Gustafson. And you can see the fans kind of cheering for him. Matt's pulling it up on Twitter. We can also pull up the Twitter verse here so you can kind of get a look at it. Anthony Smith is my favorite story in MMA. Impressive.
It's really insane where he's come from. Like, I was just telling Craig when we were running the ads, like, if you had told me 2 years ago that Anthony Smith was going to go to Sweden and choke out Alexander Gustafsson, I would ask what kind of drugs you were on right now. Because it's just, oh no, Gustafsson retired. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy to just see where this guy's come from. I mean, he was fighting Rashad Evans on the early prelims in UFC 225. And then within less than a year fighting John Jones and now beating Alexander Gustin. It's crazy the evolution that his career has taken. And it's weird, too, because most guys hit their prime between, like, 27 and 32, and they've only got maybe 15 fights. I mean, Anthony Smith's been around.
He's got what? He's what now? 32 and 14. Yeah. So like, he's got a ton of professional experience. This is a guy that was fighting for, you know, CFFC all the damn time. He's fighting, you know, fighters that you might recognize that ended up in the UFC, but in the UFC and moving up to 205 after the Thiago Santos loss early in 2018. Man, he looks great. So I don't anticipate a title shot for him after this win. I think maybe one more. Although these guys are title caliber opponents. Like Gustafsson and Smith, you could put them up against anybody at 205 and flip a coin, they're going to get a win.
But that's the weird thing. Like 205 is in this weird period where the division itself is really, really fun. It's just the champions, he's so much better than everyone just at this point. It's a bunch of prospects fighting a guy who's kind of, I don't know, settled in as his role as champion. If we had, let's say Anthony Smith was champion and the rest of the division was the exact same, I mean, think about how much fun that 205 would be. I mean, there's so many good prospects. There's a lot of veterans. I mean, it's one of the better divisions if you exclude title shots, I find at least.
Yeah, it was one of the divisions. If you asked me in 2016-17 what I thought about light heavyweight, I'd say, hey, probably one of the worst divisions in the UFC, aside from maybe heavyweight at the time.
Women's bantamweight.
But right now, even when women's bantamweight back then, you had Miesha Tate, you had Amanda Nunes, and Rousey that you could talk about.
Sure.
Right now, UFC light heavyweight's one of the strongest divisions that they have. So a great win there for Anthony Smith, retiring Alexander Gustafsson. That's insane to talk about in 2019. So realistically, if we go back, this is a UFC Stockholm post-fight show. If you have anything you want to toss down in the comments, do it on sportsbook.tv. Do it over on YouTube. We appreciate everyone joining us for this. Millie says over there, that was a great finish. The Rakic knockout was so clean. The elbow to the face right before the choke was money in that main event. But if we go all the way back and we look at Joel Alvarez taking on Danilo Beluardo, that was a special fight because we had talked about it in the pre-fight show. Alvarez, you know, he got a tough opponent in his first one against Demir Ismagulov. And in the first round, he didn't look all that great against Beluardo. But in the second one, he was able to get the back of the Italian fighter. And if you look at it from Twitter, I mean, just a great finish for him. The TKO win there. You can see him on top of his opponent. So a really good one. Now, it's going to be interesting, you know, what comes next for him, because he's such a tall guy to be in that division. I mean, taking on a guy like Beluardo, you don't know what to expect from him. He's coming over from Venator. I know there's been some decent fighters from Venator in the past. I'm looking at Stefano Paterno, who's a Cage Warriors champ. But there's also fighters who have come into the UFC, and they mentioned a few of them. But for Alvarez, it's got to be another one of those build-up fights.
Who was the guy who just fought Gilbert Burns on short notice? Like, a guy like that, a guy who's fought maybe a good guy on short notice, he's only had a couple fights in the UFC, you don't want to see him fight in the top, you know, 25 just yet. Give him a few more build-up fights.
100%. And moving along, a fight that a lot of people were really excited about, and Matt, you and I had taken Darko Stazic. He looked great.
I took Devin Clark.
Stazic looked great. He did. In his last fight. Devin Clark looked equally, you know, as good in bouts previous, but against top competition, he really kind of faltered. But in this one, Devin Clark looked really good. His wrestling, you know, was definitely on point. He was able to earn a decision win, but it was definitely a decision win where he was on top of it for the majority of the fight. You saw he was looking for a spinning back elbow in a lot of points, and you know that the power is there from Stazic. It's something that I'm sure we're going to see going forward. He's a Crow Cop team member, but a good one for Clark, and he wanted to face one of those top 205ers that was on this card. That's what he said after
this fight. Maybe this isn't the fight to get him into that. I'd like to see him maybe fight one more guy who's not in the top 15, because Devin Clark's one of these guys. Just as an athlete, he's one of the more athletic guys at 205. He does have big power. That's the thing. If you break his game into just singular parts, he's not a bad fighter. Just kind of that putting it all together. And I'd maybe like to see him get one more. Maybe Spann, who beat Nogueira.
Yeah, Ryan Spann would make
sense.
That'd
be a great fight next. Just something like that to get him into that top 15 category.
For sure, that makes sense. And moving forward, the next fight, you had Sweden's own Bia Malecki taking on Duda Santana. Santana looked great in the first
round.
That
fight should have been at 145. If you saw them both at weigh-ins, they both looked terrible. Bia Malecki just, like, she looked awful.
No, and they said that she lived on her teammate from The Ultimate Fighter, Macy Chason's couch in Texas to train for this with Fortis MMA. Uh-huh. She looked good, and her jiu-jitsu ultimately won her the fight, but for Duda Santana, I actually do want to see more of her. I know, you know, the records, you had a 3-0 taking on a 2-0, and Duda Santana moving to 3-1. But realistically, she did look good on the feet. I think she brings, you know, a lot to be desired at 135 or 145 in the UFC. And I'm looking forward to more from her, because realistically, yeah, I mean, she did look pretty good, and you could see it. I mean, in the post-fight speech, you had Malecki telling Dan Hardy, I was actually looking for the choke in this one. So it's interesting to see what could come next from both of these fighters.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the thing. In the women's 135, it's not the deepest division. And I don't mean that talent-wise, the top 15 is really good. But I think there might only be like 20 fighters in the actual division. So if you can string together a few wins, like, you're right in the title picture.
100%. And in the next fight, you know, possible performance Frank of the Camacho. Night bonus going to Frank Camacho. We'll find that out after this fight. But
I'm pretty sure I can tell you one of them at least. Well, two.
Yeah, but Frank Camacho looked great in this one. You can see those striking totals. I had the Article 3 stats and an odd at the start of the week, and it was Frank Camacho's significant strikes landed per minute, or even strikes landed per minute. It's absurd. So now he's got 5 fights in the UFC. He won't be ranked in any of those categories simply because he split time between lightweight with 4 fights and 1 fight at welterweight. Yep. So yeah, but he looked great against Germany's Nick Hein, and I think for the Sergeant, this could be the last time we see him in the UFC. I know he's a lot of fun to see. He's got that judo background. His boxing's really good. Frank Camacho was able to string together, you know, just some great striking in this one. As you can see here from UFC Canada, I mean, just an insane finish there from
big
him.
Big barrage of strikes.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Good stoppage. Though.
Yeah, what you expect in a Frank Camacho type of fight. So what would be next for him at 155? A guy who's super entertaining, possibly 4 bonuses to his name so far in his tenure with the UFC.
James Vick, he's lost 3 in a row. I think that could be a great... Or sorry, he's only lost 2 in a row. But he's one of those kind of fringe top 15 guys. I don't know if James Vick really necessarily belongs in the top 15. And I don't mean that. It just... Right now, I don't know if he belongs in the top 15. So maybe him and Frank Camacho, that could be a fun fight. Someone along those lines. I don't want to see him fight any of them really, really high ranked. James Vick was a stupid answer. That's my bet. I'd like to see him fight like an Abel Trujillo. Maybe a...
Abel Trujillo's not in the UFC
sorry.
Anymore.
What I'm trying to say, who fought Abel Trujillo?
A lot of different guys.
No. He just did. He throws the spinning stuff. You interviewed him. He throws spinning. He fought Cowboy. He fought Abel Trujillo. He was supposed to fight Nasrat Haqparast.
You've hit me at a tough spot.
You know exactly who it is.
I do not at this time. John McDessie.
John McDessie. That's who I'd like to see him fight next. There you go.
That could be a fun one, and it would make a lot of sense. And one of the fights that you and I predicted, and correctly here, but not by the way that we thought, it was actually by TKO... Or, sorry, knockout. Leonardo Santos over Stevie Ray. Man.
He's 39 years old, barely fights, but when he does, it is something to watch. That right hand was vicious, too. He, like, slapped him with it.
Yeah, I mean, just absolutely sent him flying. Yeah, and damn, what did Santos do to Stevie?
Did him the stanky leg. That's what he did.
So, he's one of those guys on a super, super win streak that people just wouldn't realize. The thing is, though, and it's really weird to me, he's 39 years
old.
Exactly. It's so hard
to
believe.
And he never fights.
I won't ask who he could fight next because that's a really tough one to try and predict. Whether we see him back in the octagon soon or not, but a great win for him there. And I'm looking forward to more from Leonardo Santos. And somebody else that maybe not looking forward to more of, because both of these fighters are 37 at the time, but Lena Landsberg, I mean, a great win over Tonya Evinger. She really, really put it on the line. Hometown favorite there, getting the win. You can see it from the total strikes, 151-68 for Evinger. Cyborg on short notice. Then you've got Aspen Ladd, and then you've got Lena Landsberg. And it could be the end of her career.
I think,
you know, injuries have kind of piled up too. She had major knee surgery earlier on in 2018.
After the Cyborg fight.
So, you know, more left to be desired realistically from her just because she went on such a good run in Invicta, and we just didn't get to see that here in the
UFC. And it's unfortunate too, because when you look at someone like Yana Kunitskaya, who, same thing, came over from Invicta, they split 1-1 apiece, like, you would think that they'd be similar skill level-wise, but we've seen the complete opposite during the UFC tenure.
Yeah, it's been really tough. And for Landsberg, 37, I mean, she has had some decent fights in the UFC. Somebody else that did fight Cyborg,
Aspen
2
Ladd
wins
well.
Over Lucy Pudilova as well. So she's beaten good competition. Obviously, both fighters rank at bantamweight in the UFC.
Bechkohea next is what I'm thinking.
Possibly. And in the next one, a man who, you know, just wore it all on the line.
Like, Rustam, shave your chest.
Rustam Akman, yeah, I mean...
That's that old school Matt Brown look.
Yeah, realistically. You had Honda, which is a weak nickname, and Sergey Hondoska getting the win there. But yeah, I mean, it was a good fight overall. There were good points for Akman. He really pushed forward a lot of the time. We saw a lot of defensive fighting from Honda. You saw him with his back up against the cage quite a bit. But realistically, led in the strikes, had a better overall wrestling base for him. And overall, too, I mean, way more fights. He had over 30 professional fights.
Exactly. The experience was definitely in his
favor. The experience was in his favor, both guys making their debut. And I'm looking forward to seeing both more from both of those guys. Plus, from Honda, he looked just like a Russian version of Diesel Joe Riggs.
Yes, there you go.
Without the silly tattoo.
Shout out to Diesel Joe.
So, in our next fight, opening up the main card.
Dango just saved himself his job.
He really came out swinging. I think I have a gif here of him. Yeah. He came out and threw as hard as he could early. You can see For me, you know, Sungbin Jo and Aaron Bronstetter put it well. I mean, now he becomes a linear title holder in three different organizations. But realistically, lot left to be desired from Jo because...
Exactly.
We saw it in his last fight. It was a win in the fourth round. You and I talked about how good his cardio is, but he's kind of a slow starter. So in the first round of this fight, Tamor was all over him. And then I thought, well, he's going to pick it up. In the second round, he kind of picked it up. The judges ultimately scored it 230-27s for Tamor, 129-28 for Jo, winning that round. In the third round, Tamor poured it on, and he definitely looked great in that one. I mean... kind of the Tamor that we expected to see coming into the UFC that we never really got before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all of his performances up until this, they left a lot to be desired, but this is kind of this is your coming out party for Daniel Tamor. He looked good. It's just the problem with Daniel Tamor is his striking, he hits hard, but it's very wild and it does leave him open for a lot of counters. So you really got to worry about that when he does start to face sort of the upper echelon of the division.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he gets next. I mean, a guy who's 1-3, but kind of back on track, and a performance like that will definitely net him a decent opponent, and he'll hopefully be sticking around in the UFC with his brother. He's definitely a draw in Sweden, and you saw a lot of emotion from him in that fight. The next one, a possible fight of the night, you had Demir Hadzevich taking on Christos Yagos, and while it was a good fight, and I know a lot of the fans really enjoyed it, listen, I mean, Yagos did a little bit of nipple pinching in there. He was able to pull away with a decision win for Hadzevich. It kind of stopped the momentum that he did have coming into this one. Not a really surprising fight, but it's kind of tough because both of these guys are in that 25-15 type of range. And with a win like this, I don't see Yagos getting a top-ranked opponent.
No, exactly. I mean, the last... fight that I remember of his very vividly was him fighting Charles Oliveira, and I know that was on short notice, and that's a tough draw for anybody, but Oliveira's barely in the top 15, I think, so it's tough. It's just, lightweight is so stacked from top to bottom. The top 20 of lightweight could be champion any other day. It's just really hard to make any headway. I just like to see him keep on fighting prospects, keep on building your name, and then eventually you'll probably get one of those bigger names.
100%. And in the next fight, you and I previewed it extensively. I had taken Fish Gold, you had taken Amirakani, but neither one of us would have figured that it went this way. Makwan Amirakani picking up that Anaconda choke win, I believe. Yeah, we got the video queued up here. And listen, it was like an Angus Young guitar solo on the stage, both guys spinning around, and... a great win for Makwan Amirakani, beating the BJJ specialist in Chris Fishgold. Amirakani went weird with a hockey shout out with the world championships that just went on. But a great win there for Makwan.
Beating Fishgold by submission, too, was way more impressive. Just the fashion in which he did it was phenomenal. Great fight, too.
Yeah, definitely a great fight there. In your co-main, we talked about
it from the start. All-Violence first team, Alexander Rakic.
Jimmy Manoa.
Jimmy.
Lost his last four. First one was by finish. Then there was a decision. Then two finish losses that were really tough to watch.
Jimmy, you know how your fights go. You either brutally knock them out or they brutally knock you out. Don't invite your wife and your kid to your fight if you know that that's a possibility. I mean, yeah, it was like shovel hook into a left high kick, and it landed so flush it's not even funny. Jimmy's in the shadow realm right now.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those finishes where it reminded me, and we talked about it before we came on air.
Aljamain Sterling and Marlon Moraes.
Like Holly Holm all the damn time, because that's her setup, and that's the kick that you see from her.
Oh, I just meant more like the just way clockwork. That Jimmy was on the ground. Like, those are knockouts where you're like, knockout, yay. Yeah. It was bad, though. I mean, great for Rakic. You can't really end a fight better than that.
Yeah.
You just... decapitated him, man. And he's right there in the mix. Like, now people are finally gonna start to know who he is, but we've been preaching him for a while, ever since he fought your boy. I'm about Justin Ledet. He just ran over Justin Ledet, dropped him like four times, took him down, beat breaks off him for most of the fight.
Yeah, Justin Liddett with the Rakic, and then he had to take on Johnny Walker.
Tough draws.
Hopefully there was a deal under the table. He got paid well, because those are two tough ones.
Yeah, and I mean, Rakic can do it all too, and his striking is good. I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, how he lunges for his strikes, and he's going to get caught. He's a better wrestler than he is a striker. People don't really realize that. I mean, his wrestling is phenomenal. That's a bad head kick, guys.
That's a bad one. And then, I mean, moving forward, listen, I mean, Alexander Gustafsson looked good at one point, but yeah, I mean, that's the end of it, so it seems. And it's going to be one of those ones. I know MMA on Point had the video that came out earlier on this week about fighters that, and we've used this, you know, sentence so many times in the show already, but leaving more to be desired. Johnson was one guy. GSP was at the top of the list. I threw down TJ Grant as a name because... Fair. Man, he won a lightweight title eliminator against Gray Maynard. Knocked him out, and wasn't it the first round?
First round, need him.
Yeah, and then had to retire due to injuries. So that was a tough one to see. But Alexander Gustafsson, a guy who, like Mike Heck called me in the first episode of Between the Links, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. And then I won that show, and actually I won a show before that. But
easy, Craig.
So many chances, but he could never really get it done.
He's like the Carlos Condit of the light heavyweight division. Carlos got, what, three chances at the title? Two? Anyways, just always at the top, could never get that chance. Couldn't get the chance, could never get the win. I mean, he had the split decision with DC, unanimous with John, that a lot of people thought he won, and then just kind of went downhill from there.
I'll get mad at Drink, who's got the hiccups, but the question for Millie, do you think he would have retired if he won?
I don't.
It's a legitimate possibility.
Here's the only reason why. Again, if you listen to him on Luke Thomas, not a plug, but send us money. He just kept on saying the whole time he didn't think that Anthony Smith was near his level, and that if he couldn't beat Smith, he shouldn't be around anymore. And fair enough, I would rather see a guy get out when they know that they don't have it than if they just keep on sticking around. Like, I think Uriah Faber and what he's doing is the dumbest thing possible. You're coming back to fight a nobody who's really, really good. Ricky Simone doesn't have a big fan base. We know who he is. We're the hardcore.
Yeah, I don't know if nobody's right.
We know Ricky Simone is going to light him on fire. Uriah Faber just lost to a 16-year-old.
They're
a different point. Either way, it just, you need to know when the line, when the road ends, you kind of need to see it coming. And some guys do. Guys like Bisping, he retired, now he's in movies, he's doing a lot of stuff outside of this.
Got a book coming out,
got a documentary coming out. Michael Bisping sent us money, but he's got other stuff to do outside of just the sport of MMA. And I know he's still involved. He helps coach a little bit at Ruka. He does a lot of color commentary. And it'd be nice if more fighters did have those avenues to take, so they didn't have to fight, you know, late into their careers when they keep on getting stopped and take a lot of damage that they don't need, guys like BJ Penn. So I don't want to see Gustin fall into that, so I'm kind of happy that he's just kind of getting out now before it gets too bad.
So, I mean, that pretty much does us for our post-fight show, UFC Stockholm. I mean, you've got so many good cards coming up. UFC 238 coming up. Absolutely stacked.
Tony Ferguson, Cowboy Cerrone.
Great fights. Fight Night Picks. You can find us at fightnightpicks.net. You can find myself on Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP. Millie says, are we pumped to see the return of Tony next week?
You have no idea how excited I am for that fight. Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier was the last time I was this excited.
I think Tony wins, but I don't know. It's going to be fun.
I just mean that was the last time I was this excited. Cowboy by TKO.
Yeah, I've got Tony Ferguson by submission.
That's
but a great game. Fight.
I love
there. Looking forward to it. If you want merch too, hit us up.
Yeah,
hit us up. Maybe we're gonna be generous with some of that stuff moving forward. But looking forward to it this week in MMA. Coming up next week, of course, we'll recap these fights one more time in little bit less detail. But looking forward to that. Hit us up, like I said, on Twitter and Instagram. And give us a sub on sportsbooth.tv as well as YouTube. We appreciate it. You'll know when we go live. And hopefully you can join us for the next episode of Fight Night Picks. We'll find you next week.